Welcome to episode 42 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. We are very excited to have a special guest today. So, Booty, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes, we're delighted to have Debbie Frabel, who is the owner and dyer for Serial Knitters Dye House, an online yarn shop that also sells at local yarn shops, pop-ups, and craft fairs. So welcome, Debbie.
Thank you.
Our first question is one that we pretty much ask everybody, unless it's our family members who don't knit or crochet. But how did you learn to knit?
Probably like a lot of people have, their older sister was learning to knit from their mom, and I had to do everything my older sister did. My sister was 7 years older than me. I was 5 years old. So you can just imagine the lace that I was making.
Yes, we all start with lace, right?
Yeah. Maybe not on purpose. I was very proud of her. And what's funny is that she doesn't really knit very much anymore, but I knit a lot. I mean, she can knit, but she doesn't do it very much. She never really progressed her knitting beyond, you know, scarves and maybe hats or whatever.
I've known Debbie for a number of years. My good friend Lucy used to live close to me in Kirkland, and she and I used to go over to Debbie's yarn shop, which was in Kirkland, Washington, and spent a lot of good times with Debbie learning about yarn and projects, and there was just a wealth of knowledge that I got from you. And so sadly, at some point, the yarn shop closed right around COVID.
Yeah, August of 2020. So I opened August of 2010. I had a 5-year lease with an option, a 5-year option. And when the lease came due, because I exercised my 5-year option, and when the lease came due to renegotiate, was the start of the pandemic. So that was in February of 2020. If you remember, there was a nursing home in Kirkland.
Yes, that was ground zero.
Where it was really the big major outbreak, right? And shop was in Kirkland, and a lot of nurses liked it. Anyways, so a lot of people were at my shop at the Knit Circles, coughing and hacking, and saying, oh yeah, I got some kind of a bug or whatever. So I think it was in the shop before we even knew about COVID.
Oh, wow.
But I was negotiating a lease and going back and forth and back and forth trying to get a better deal, because I was paying a lot for that space. That was an expensive space. And so I was really hoping to get a better deal. And then as the pandemic was, you know, as things were coming around and we were learning more and more about it, I was getting a little bit more reluctant to sign the lease. And then I finally decided, you know what? I don't know how long this is going to last. These guys aren't willing to negotiate with me. They didn't want to do, you know, I'm like, can we do a month to month for now and just see how things go? I mean, they're like, nope. I'm like, how about we just do like a year? And they're like, nope. And I'm just like, well, you know, when you sign a lease, you are committed to the length of the lease, regardless of what your income is.
Yeah.
So you can lose your house. I mean, you whatever, if you can't cover it and you can't sell the business. And during a pandemic, selling a business is really nearly impossible, if not impossible. So I was just like, you know what? No, I'm not doing it. Not doing it. Not signing the lease. So I decided I was going to close. I would say the hardest thing about that, first of all, was making the decision, but telling my people. It was heartbreaking telling my employees.
How many employees did you have at that point?
I had 13 employees.
Oh, wow.
I mean, part-time. Most everybody was part-time. And then I had, you know, teachers too. So I had a lot of people depending on it,
right,
for a little bit of income, right? I mean, not that you pay yarn shop employees a whole lot of money. Teachers make pretty good money, but It was a community.
Yeah.
A lot of my employees were there from 2010 all the way through to 2020.
But I
And
remember you kept some community going online. I remember you had some Zooms and kind of just trying to keep the connection alive. And you were so great at, because you were supporting other dyers at that point. You were trying to give them some publicity, which was really great. And I'm so thankful that you kept your business going. It was called Serial Knitters Underground because you no longer had the brick and mortar, but you were still dyeing yarn.
Yes, it was dyeing yarn in a secret location.
Well, and how did you come up with the name Serial Knitters?
Really strange. It just popped into my head weirdly. And I told my husband, I woke up in the morning and it was in my head. And I said, I think I'm going to call my shop Serial Knitters. And he says, don't call it that. You don't know who's going to show up if you call it that. And I'm like, yes, I do. yes, I actually do know. And those are exactly the people I want to show up. So that just cemented it right down. He said that. I was like, nope, that's exactly what it's going to be. And it's amazing how many people that didn't knit noticed the name as they were driving past the store. I'd go to the bank, the teller at the bank would be like, you know, I saw your store. It was the coolest name.
And it has a tattoo, a heart with the knitting needles.
Yes. So it's really funny because when I was going to have my grand opening, they had like the first Stitch and Pitch. Do you remember Stitch and Pitch? And I got a booth at Stitch and Pitch and we had tattoos made, like temporary
Oh,
tattoos.
right.
I think it was a few days before we actually opened the store that we had the booth. And so it was a really big deal that people came, stopped by and got the tattoos. And then they went, when we had the store opening, they came in wearing their tattoos.
Yeah, Stitch and Pitch is a baseball game where they designate one night to you get to come and knit or crochet or whatever, which obviously you can do any night you want, but they have yarn for sale. It's a bigger event.
Did they still have that?
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
think, I don't know if they're having it this, I think they had it this last year.
They did have it last year. I don't know if I went last year, but the year before, definitely.
But fewer and fewer vendors now. It's fun, but what I can tell you is that they don't give you a whole lot of time to set up your booth, and you have to like set up your booth and tear down your booth all in one night.
Oh, right. It's not even a full day.
I mean, there's maybe a two, is it even 2 hours of selling before the event? And then nobody really buys stuff after. And really, they don't, there's not a whole lot of sales during. So I've like decided that it's not worth it. It's a lot of work. It's really hard work.
Well, take us through that a little bit more. My husband is a woodworker, and so he goes to craft shows and things. And I don't think people realize. Take us through when somebody goes up and they're going to buy some yarn from you, what's all the work behind it?
So setting up a booth?
The whole thing, dyeing the yarn, setting that, yeah, the whole thing.
Well, it all depends on the event itself, because something like Stitch and Pitch, you're not going to take as much yarn as something like Flock. No, if you have a double booth, which is like the booth sizes, a lot of general booth sizes are 10 feet by 10 feet. And I think it varies, but for the most part, at fiber festivals, your general booth size is 10 by 10. And I usually try and get a double. So I have a 10 by 20. And when I do a 10 by 20, I mean, I have multiple bases that I dye, everything from a silk mohair sort of lace weight through my sock, my sport, DK weight. I do mini skeins. I do some sort of more novelty-ish yarns. Like I have a boucle that I dye. And then I just started dyeing a new base that's a silk, mostly silk. and then a little bit of mohair and some
Oh.
merino, but yeah, with a little bit of flex in it. It's really nice yarn. It's called Echo Lake Tweed. It's a lot of different bases that you dye. And then, you have to have a good showing of colors, and you have to have sweater quantity and everything. So, sweater quantity, I mean, I usually dye in batches of 5 skeins each, but I try and have a minimum of 10 skeins of each color. Some of the more basic colors, I try and have even more than that.
So, how many, if you've got this 10 by 20 booth, I mean, that seems like a lot of space. Like, how many ideally skeins are you trying to bring in?
Well, so for my best seller, which is my Cherry Creek sock, I would say at least 300.
Wow, 300 skeins.
At least 300 of my Cherry Creek sock. I might try and do more than that just because it is a really good seller. My DK weight, I try and have at least half of that, if not 200 skeins.
Wow.
That's a really good sweater yarn.
Right.
So, would you say you have between all of the colors and all the sizes, you're bringing 5,000 skeins?
No, probably not 5,000.
In the thousand,
In the
probably.
thousand. I mean, we're already up
Could
to like
be.
750 with just two.
Right.
Yeah, but those are my two best sellers. And then, yeah, I mean, probably about at least 100 skeins each of the other bases. 100, 150 skeins of the other bases. And then I try and have a whole lot of mini skeins. And mini skeins, I don't even know if you can count them by the singles. When I dye mini skeins, I dye 5 at a time, sometimes 10 at a time, but I usually dye them alongside full size skeins. So it makes it a lot easier to produce a lot of those.
Okay. I'd say.
And now I've been trying to dye more of those because we've got a whole, I don't know if you are into the doodle thing.
Yeah.
But the doodle decks have come out. People are doing a lot of color work right now. And it's really nice to have a very small amount to buy as opposed to having to buy a full size skein.
I should explain the doodle decks are basically like little decks of cards, and we've talked about them before that have motifs on them, so you can kind of mix and match and do color work. Like there's a Seattle one that has the Space Needle or the Seahawks.
I think I got a couple of those little cards at Rhinebeck. Yeah.
And the book.
They're fun to collect. It's a very clever idea.
Yes.
Very clever. Jamie Lomax, she's the creator of Doodle Decks. It was very clever, and the timing of it has been very good because color work has been popular. She just came out with the cat and the dog Doodle Decks
Yes.
just this last week, I think.
Yep.
Which I bought, of course.
I know, I need to get them.
Yeah, I have them online just because I lose things. And we just recently remodeled our house and we cleaned out a whole lot of stuff, books, and so I mean, just got rid of stuff. I don't want to reclutter everything. So
Right.
having it all on Ravelry is nice because you just print it out when you need it.
It is a good idea because you have the little dash, so you have a thing, but then you can also get it online or do both.
Nice to do both. Like I said, I'm trying to cut back on my clutter.
Yeah.
So,
Well, and so when you bring in all of this yarn, but then you've also got to set up.
oh, hardware. Yeah. So for flock last year.
Oh, and just to explain, Flock is a summer yarn festival in Seattle. It's in August, and this will be the third year and the third year that Debbie is participating in it.
Yeah, that's right. I was there the first year when it was at Magnuson Park, and then last year when it moved to the Seattle Convention Center. So last year I had 8 metal grids. Don't know if you've seen those, like I have these white metal grids that you put hooks on and you hang things on. They're pretty heavy and they're bulky, and you have to get them there, and you have to find a way to get them to your booth. And then you have to set them up. I use like zip ties to zip them together. And I set them up a certain way so that they hopefully don't fall over and injure anybody. Although when I was setting up my booth last year, I did have the dolly that I had these grids on collapse and land on my leg.
Oh no.
And I got the worst contusions on my leg ever. I was lucky I didn't break it, but my leg, oh, it hurt so bad. And then it ballooned up, and I had to get ice packs. And my assistant, Jackie, she was taking masking tape, wrapping these ice packs onto my leg.
Oh, just what you want.
I ended up setting up the booth with my leg like that and doing the whole show.
Oh, I had no idea I was there.
See, that's why I wanted to ask you, because that's what my husband says, is that everybody comes in, and by the time they're coming in, everything is set up and is beautiful. And while you're getting your dolly with all your stuff, all the other vendors are trying to get and trying to park at the place closest to their booth, and it's just mayhem. But
It
then
is.
everybody walks in and it's like, oh,
It's so
well, yeah, it's just
beautiful. Magic.
fun.
You know
Yeah.
what it reminds me of is teaching preschool too, because you set all this stuff up and then those little kids come in and they wreck everything. That's me with your yarn going
Oh, well,
through.
yeah. And
Joyful wreckage. It's all good.
well, and the point my husband makes is that you're exhausted by the time the show opens. And
Yeah.
then you got to be nice to everybody, which
Right.
that can be hard when you've got your leg in masking tape
It's painful.
and it's
Yeah,
painful.
it can be
Yeah.
hard. Yeah. And then standing up during a show when your leg is like, I mean, you did all this work to get ready for it, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to like pack all your tubs, pack all your stuff, shove it all in your car. Unpack it all from your car, bring it all up into your booth, set your whole booth up, make everything look pretty. And then if you can't follow through with that, then all of that is for what?
Right.
And dyeing is hard work. I don't know how much dyeing you have witnessed.
Actually, that was my next question. Take us through the dyeing process because I've never done it.
When I dye yarn, I get a bag of yarn. And I have to prep it. And by doing that, I end up taking my yarn out. When I am dyeing this, in order to prep, and what I'm pulling out is silk mohair, a mini skein. It is a skein of undyed white silk mohair. They have these ties on it.
Yeah.
And I have to tease the ties out so that they don't resist the dye. I have to do that for every skein and every tie on every skein.
How many ties are there usually? Like four?
This particular skein, this mini skein, has three.
Okay.
And then I put dye ties on them, which is a tie that I put on to be able to manipulate the skeins and to keep the skeins from getting twisted. Getting like one strand that kind of pulls out funny.
So is it just kind of like another loop of yarn that
I use a worsted weight undyed cotton yarn, and I use that to just manipulate my skeins. Some people use shower curtain rings.
Oh, okay.
I have found that the shower curtain rings for me snag my yarn, and I don't like that. Some people use zip ties. I found that the zip ties also snag my yarn, and I don't like that. And so the least damage that occurs is with the cotton yarn ties. So we cut ties a certain length, and what I need to do is be able to get my hand in there and flip the yarn around and move the ties without having anything resist the dye. Because ties can actually resist dye and leave white spots in your dye on a skein, which I really don't like. Some people don't like unless you're purposely leaving white. Yeah. So I usually start off with tying my yarn and having tubs sitting around with The yarn already tied with the dye ties and with it teased out so that I don't have the resistance spots. And then I take and I soak it, wash it out in a textile detergent so that I get any fats or dirt or anything else that's going to resist dye out of the yarn. And then I turn and soak it in a acid bath. And when I say acid bath, it's a little bit of citric acid in water.
Oh, okay.
And it's food safe citric acid. It's not to dissolve bodies
We didn't think that, but now that you said
No,
it,
but I've got a little bit of a goth side to me. So anyways,
hence the serial knitters.
yeah, a little bit of a goth side. Anyway, yes. So I soak them in this acid bath, and then I use different methods depending on the colorway that I'm dyeing. I do some solids where I do a dip method, and those are multiple dips in the same color or layers of color. And then sometimes I do a speckle, which I lay in the pan and then I apply powder dyes too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sometimes I just sprinkle powder dyes. Sometimes I sprinkle some powder dyes and I kind of work them in. Sometimes I do a combination of things where I would maybe dip a skein and then I would maybe pour some colors over it and then I would speckle some colors onto it. Something like my Magic Conch. I don't know if you are
Oh, yeah.
familiar with that colorway, but that one is, it's not dipped, but I have some dye in the pan. I put it in the pan. I do some pour over colors and then I do some speckling. So a lot of my stuff is layered colors in some way or another. Sometimes a colorway will go into the pan a couple of times, even three times, depending on what I'm doing. If I'm layering colors, because sometimes you do the speckling first and then you do a dip, is it gives you a little bit different effect.
What's your inspiration when you're thinking about a colorway?
A lot of times I just lose myself in the muse. There is a term for that when the muse just takes over. You sort of lose yourself. And I find that with drawing, I've done a lot of different types of art. I've painted, I've done digital media, I've done ceramics. I find that when I die, I am truly lost in it. And sometimes the colors just come out and then I name it. And sometimes I have an inspiration, and my inspirations are very quirky. They come from somewhere nobody knows where.
Can you give me an example of like one?
You know, I'm holding up one. This is a one of a kind, and it's on the one you were talking about, Echo Lake Tweed. Absolutely love this yarn. It's so beautiful. And I want to say, I don't know how many colors. So it's called Sunny Day Seattle.
So that one was actually one where I was trying to create a colorway that would be good for a flock. That, I mean, sunny day in Seattle, what does that look like? So I came up with a name for it before I came up with it. And it just was, a sunny day in Seattle inspiring me because I figured flock people, they're going to be there in summer and they want something to remind them of being there.
Well, and how many different colors are on here, do you
Well,
think?
and Booty, describe the colors.
Well, actually, Debbie should describe the colors because
I should see if I can find another skein of Sunny Day Seattle, and then I can describe them for you. Let me go look and see if I have one handy.
I bought
Hold
them
on a
all,
second.
so they're none left.
I know I had some.
You little yarn piggy.
I love this so much, and I bought it with this other one.
What color is that? The other one.
This one is called Drac Snack, like Dracula Snack.
Yeah, and it's a kind of dark reddish.
A little of my goth coming out again.
The Drac Snack is such a beautiful red.
Yeah, gotta have a little of that goth coming out. Okay, so I have a skein in the DK in the Sunny Day Seattle. And I mean, there's so much water around here. So you got to do water. There's always clouds. So you got to leave a little white because there's always cloud. And then there's flowers and there's green things. So sometimes when you overlap some colors, you get a little brown, but there's always a little brown around too.
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
Yeah.
No, it does. I'm mainly seeing multi-tones of blues and whites, but then it's got these beautiful pinks and yellows
A
and
little bit of
a little
green.
bit of green and a little bit of brown, and it's gorgeous. Yeah. Well, that's so cool. Well, what do you wish that knitters knew about hand-dyed yarn? I feel like you're taking us behind the scenes. You've described the work and the work and the work of setting it up and then of the process of dyeing. But what else? Because, we're seeing it and it's, we're just knitting with it and enjoying it.
I really feel that knitters need to know how much work is involved in a skein of hand-dyed yarn. Sometimes I think that knitters, when they come around to a booth to shop, they think, oh, that's so expensive. But if you break down the amount of time you spend with a skein, and not maybe not all dyers do, I feel like I spend a lot of time with my yarn before it hits the table. But if you spend that much time, I think you need to understand all the work that goes into it and have an appreciation for that.
Well, and I think too, just to get back to the process, because you talked about layering and the speckles, you have a unique process. You steam the yarn.
So I actually have one of those warming ovens, I guess they use in kitchens a lot of times. In professional kitchens. And I use the rectangular hotel pans. Some of my stuff goes into a pot, an actual pot kettle dyed, but I usually dye it cold in the pot. And then I cook it in the steam oven. And I find that it works really well with speckles because it helps the speckles set without them spreading. But it's a good way of dyeing larger quantities of yarn. So I used to dye in turkey roasters. And I would just dye the stuff and I would just wash it out and then I would hang it up to dry and all in the same day. And now what I do is I dye a bunch of yarn, I throw it all in the oven, I set the oven on and I let it cook until it reaches a certain temperature and then I turn it off. And then the next day, I wash everything out and hang everything up. So I have a dye day and then a wash day.
How long does it take to dry at that point?
It depends on the humidity level. I have a dehumidifier. Nothing about my dye process is glamorous. Okay. First of all, I consider myself a glorified washerwoman. And I'm dying, except for the fact that I'm dealing with color and I am in love with color. And it's inspiring to me and it keeps me going. But it's a heavy job in that you're dealing with wet skeins of yarn, you're dealing with big pots of water, you're dealing with heavy pans of wet water, yarn, and you're hunched over a sink washing out yarn. There's nothing really glamorous about it. It's a hard job physically.
Think there was a show that the yarn didn't dry in time.
Oh gosh, that must have been a while back. I think I remember bringing some yarn to a show and hanging it
They're drying.
at the show and not having it twisted because it was a really good colorway and I couldn't leave it at home. I had to bring it.
Well, and then that's the other question. You come up with these beautiful colors, and then you've got to repeat it because it's not everything can be a one of a kind.
Right, but not everything can be repeated. So sometimes I don't really want to do a color again. So I guess it's the artist part of me that comes out. Sometimes I just want it to be one and done. This is your only opportunity to get this colorway, and you either get it while it's there or you don't get it. I suppose it's maybe it's arrogant. Maybe it's
No.
It's the artist part of me that just says, hey, sometimes it's just a work of art, you just get it. But there are certain colorways that are pretty complicated that I do over and over and over again, and I've written the formula down. They are recognizably the same colorway, but depending on how complicated they are, sometimes there's a lot of variation between one dye batch and another. I know magic conk can be really gray sometimes. Sometimes the colors mix together a little more and it gets a little more brown. Sometimes they're very distinctly gray, yellow, pink, and speckles. And it just goes from batch to batch because there is variation in it no matter what you do.
Right. Although I have to say, I'm not great about alternating skeins, which I know is what you do when there's variation. And I'm wearing right now something that I made with your yarn, and I don't think you can tell. I feel like it's
Yeah.
very uniform.
Sometimes you get lucky. Okay. I'm going to tell you that if you're doing a sweater, I highly recommend. Well, I like to do top down sweaters. And I do something called helical knitting with top downs, where I have two balls of yarn. I don't do like a row and then do a row and stop at the same spot every time. Helical knitting, you end up stopping at a different point each time, and you have your skeins are chasing each other, basically.
Oh, okay.
So it's not obvious. You don't have that spot where the yarn is being pulled up, because I feel like that gets really obvious that you're changing yarns in that spot. Or if you're knitting flat, I like to do top down in the round because it fits me better, personally. Just the style of sweater that I usually like to knit. I think that you should always alternate skeins when you're doing a sweater, not necessarily other things. But if you alternate skeins when you're getting ready to change balls, you're going to be able to blend it better.
But wait, I don't understand. Like you said, you're not doing it in the same spot. How do you not have a big piece of yarn?
There's two different ways that I've seen of doing it. The way I do it is I usually have two circular needles. I have one ball of yarn attached to one circular needle and another ball of yarn attached to the other circular needle. I will knit 90% around with my stitches and then drop that ball and drop that needle. Use the next needle to knit 90%,
Okay.
drop the ball, drop the needle. My friend Jackie uses a different method, and I've not done it this way, but I'm pretty sure what she does is she'll knit everything but the last three stitches in a round, and then she'll carry the yarn over for three stitches
Okay.
and have two balls attached.
Having the two circular knit that clears it up for me.
Yeah, you can knit socks on two circulars. If you just continue going, not half, you go more than half with a
Right.
new ball of yarn. That's how I do it. But if you do the helical knitting, regardless of how you do it, you have ball management issues, which is always a thing too. But it's worth it for a sweater just because you blend it much better. You have less issues with any kind of pooling. I try not to dye yarn that pools, but no matter what, if you've got a lot of color variation, you do have issues with pooling sometimes. No matter how you lay your yarn in the pan.
Now there's the big trend of assigned pooling where you actually are intentionally pooling your yarn.
Yeah.
But
I don't know what pooling is.
I have a little sweater.
oh, do you have one of your Skelly
My
sweaters
Skelly
on?
sweaters. I just knitted a Skelly sweater. So
Oh.
if you look where the colors all are kind of together, as opposed to where the colors go across and they're
Okay.
it's different, right? Where the colors are stacked together or
Yeah.
clumped together, it's all like the same sort of dark colorway in this spot here. It's like a little light colorway in this spot. That would be pooling.
Okay.
I try and avoid this as much as possible, but I think in this little Skelly sweater, it's kind of cute.
So cute. Debbie has these cute little skeleton models. Bossy
I'll
will.
send you a photo and you can
Yeah.
post it if you want. Yeah.
Yes.
I also have a picture of some of the sweaters that I've been doing. So I've been doing these little Skelly kits, and that started off. Do you want to know how that started off?
Yes.
That started off. Okay. So, I'm kind of goth. Okay. I love Halloween. Halloween's my favorite holiday. I have Halloween party with my friends a lot of times, and I like to host it. So I like to decorate for Halloween. So 2 years ago, I started decorating with some little miniature skeletons that are posable. I found a few. I had maybe five of them. So I put them in a couple of groups, and they look like they're hanging out with each other and
So they
talking to
could
each
be
other and
friends.
having a good time. Yeah, they're friends and they're having fun and they're laughing and they're, yeah. And so then last year, Halloween, I decided these are way too much fun and I need more of them. So I bought a bunch of them. I had like two dozen, I think, maybe even more. And I started putting them around all over the place and they're super, super fun. And they made me really, really happy. I was working on this one sweater, like a grown-up sweater. And I swear, every time I turned around, I had made a mistake on it. And it was way up there. And I didn't notice it until I was going to put the sweater together. And I'm just like, nope. So then I had to pull it out again, do it again, pull it out again. Third time, I was just like, I've had it. I'm done. I need a break. So I was looking at my skellies and they were making me happy. And I decided to make a skeleton sweater. And how hard can it be? So I designed a little skeleton sweater. And I want to say that this was my first one.
It's sort of gray
It's a
and
tube.
brown, but
Yeah.
it's kind of a crop top.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have any pants,
He doesn't
but
have any. It covers his rib cage, but not his pelvis.
right. This is a really good way also to practice your gender neutral pronouns.
Oh, yes.
If you want to call them they.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's good.
Because we don't really know. I mean, I think there's a way of telling if a skeleton is male or female
Oh, right. Oh,
genetically.
yeah.
It's got to do with the hip
Yeah.
width or
Yeah.
something, but I can't tell between my skellies which one's which. So they're all me. So I made this little skeleton sweater, a little top, bottom up, a little tube, like as if you were doing like a cup cozy. And then I split for the sleeves, and then I joined at the shoulders. And then I just picked up the sleeves and worked those down. The first one I did is a three-quarter length sleeve.
Well, and that does a really nice job of showing off their wrist.
Very boxy physique.
The slender wrist.
The
Well,
slender wrists.
it's so much more fun than just a swatch.
Yes. And it is making my Skelly smile. This little Skelly is smiling big, really likes their sweater a lot.
And they kind of had their mouth open, like, yeah, gonna party.
Woohoo! Yeah.
Woohoo! Yeah.
Happy Halloween. Well, yeah. And both Debbie and I have black cats. We're fans of the black cats.
Big inspiration for Snorkel Ted colorway.
Yes. So Debbie has a yarn that is inspired by her black cat, Ted.
And what name? What's the name of it again?
It's called Snorkel Ted.
Snorkel Ted.
I had a dream about my cat and I were snorkeling.
As that happens. Yeah.
How sometimes you just bond with animals like really, really hard? And Ted is one of those of my critters that I have bonded with, and I do have dreams about Ted. Sometimes we're doing adventures together and we were snorkeling. And so I created a colorway inspired by my dream that I had about snorkeling with Ted.
That's so great. I love
This is how things come about, though, how my colorways come about. They're just weird and they just kind of happen.
Yeah. You're so great at helping me and other people pick colors to go. What advice do you have for people that are trying to figure out, because you don't always have just a one color sweater. or shawl or whatever. So sometimes you're trying to put three colors together, or what advice do you have for that?
So it depends a lot on the project. First of all, always go for colors that inspire joy. If you're doing a sweater that's a multicolor sweater, that you're doing stranded work or whatever the case is, of course, pick colors that you really like. Pick colors that you feel look good on you. But remember that you need contrast. And a good way of figuring out whether colors are going to contrast or not is to take a photo of them with your phone and then take the color saturation out and take a look and see if you can see differences. But it's really hard to say. It's very project oriented, I think, how you pick colors. Color is sort of my things. Maybe I'm intuitive about color. I really feel like it depends. But I think most people have a good idea of the colors that look good on them or the colors that complement their wardrobe. And that's a good place to start. And having a colorway that just really makes you smile when you look at it is a good place to spring off of.
It's funny that you say that because Booty and I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And do you remember that period where you could get your colors done?
Yeah.
And one of the things my mom did was she treated us all to getting our colors done. I remember I was autumn.
I'm a winter.
Mom was a winter.
Yeah.
Booty was
Summer. It's funny
summer.
because we're actually wearing the colors that all three of us are wearing, the
Yeah.
color we're supposed to be wearing.
And Liz
Yeah.
was spring. So
Yeah.
there were four of us, and we were each different things. And I have to say, I was skeptical when she first did it. But when you're sitting there and it was a woman was holding up these different swatches of colors, and you could just see that peach looks great
Was it
on
Mary Kay?
Melissa. I don't think ours was Mary Kay.
Color Me Beautiful.
Color Me Beautiful. And there was a
Oh,
book.
yeah.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
peach looks great on Melissa. And she's
She hates beach.
okay. I remember the colors that were supposed to look good on me were chocolate brown and I think like a dark green and a periwinkle blue. Periwinkle blue is supposed to be one that
Somewhat
everybody looks
universal.
good
Yeah.
in.
And teal too is pretty universal.
Yeah, but I still gravitate to those colors because there is a way that if somebody tells you, "Oh, you look good in that," it gives you confidence.
You have a favorite amongst your dyed your
To
children?
wear?
Well,
I always like.
no, to dye.
Oh, no. I like dyeing them all. Well, I would say that solids are not my favorite thing to dye. Pretty much anything that has speckles. I love dyeing things with speckles. But as far as wearing certain colors, I love mustache. So mustache is like a charcoal gray, and it has speckles that are fuchsia and green and a bit of gold in there.
I'm not picturing any men
Yeah.
with mustaches and fuchsia.
Well, so, okay. Yes. Well, if you've got a dark mustache and you're eating jelly donuts,
Cheetos and
different flavors of jelly donuts, and you don't have a nap.
That's how you get the mustache color,
Yeah.
right?
I mean, isn't that obvious?
Now that you say it, it's really obvious. But I have to say, it was completely a failure of imagination on my
Yes. Well, now that it's explained, you should be fine.
part.
Yeah, let me see. I'm going to pull up mustache for you to look at.
Oh, I
Oh,
love that.
do you see the
That's
jelly donuts now?
yeah. Oh, now I
Yeah.
definitely see the jelly
Yeah.
donut. It
Okay.
seems like a lot of jelly donuts with a little bit of mustache.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, somebody's been having a jelly donut party
Yeah.
in their mustache.
And saving a lot for later. Yeah.
I have spin-offs of colorways that I do sometimes. So I have a whole hubby series of colorways, and it's specific speckle colors that are in hubby. But there was a colorway that I did that called some hobby color. And then I did a new one. It was a blue, which was the same blue that I had used, but then I put the speckles in it. So I called it new hubby because I thought, but then I started doing the same speckle colors with a bunch of different base colors. And there's like camping with hobby, there's new hobby. I think I'm going to do Merc's your hubby. And I might have to have old hubby.
Grubby hubby,
Grubby hubby.
tubby hubby.
Oh, now we don't want to go there. I have a suggestion. What about grumpy? I did do grumpy hubby, and I did another one that was like an enabling hubby, or can't remember exactly what I called it, but it was for the shop hop, so I figured the hubbies.
Slubby hubby.
So,
Yeah,
oh, slubby hubby.
slubby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's many types of hubbies you can have. Yeah.
Yes. All good. Since we are booty and bossy, eat, drink, knit. Do you have a recipe?
I do. You want to share? I
Oh,
do. But I'm glad you have drink in there because my recipe is a sangria recipe.
yay.
I
Ooh.
make killer sangria.
Of course you do.
I make a really good sangria, and I can forward you the recipe and
Sure. Tell us a little bit about it now, and then what we'll do is we'll make it for our next episode. That's what we've been doing.
Oh,
And then we
okay.
get, and we love that it's a drink.
Yes. It is a cocktail. Yes.
Yes.
I use a bottle of cab, and then I get a cup and a half of brandy, a cup of orange juice, one of those things of frozen juice. So I like to use the orange, peach, mango.
Oh, yum. Yeah.
Throw that in. And if you want to add a little cherry juice, you can add a little cherry juice, but that's optional. Some sugar, like a half a cup of sugar. And then I cut up some apples, some oranges, some lemon, and some lime. Add some water in there because you've got the frozen juice. Put some ice, mix it all up, and you put it in the fridge and you let it sit there for at least 2 hours.
Ooh, that sounds
You know, if
great.
it marinates longer, then the fruit gets potent.
When you said brandy, you were doing some pop-ups at this distillery called Copper Cat Distillery. And so it was like
Those
yarn
guys are
and a
great.
distillery, and there's a cat theme.
I mean, what more could you need? Well, that was during the pandemic. I started a relationship with them because they had a tent outside, and you could set up outside in this tent, and then people could still wear masks and they could come and shop. It was pandemic friendly shopping and a good way to sell your yarn in person during the pandemic.
Yes, but they have. I still have some of their brandy, so I will be using that.
Yeah, and I have used their brandy in my sangria, but you don't have to use that good brandy. You can use your something that's not super expensive. And then, you know, as far as cab goes, a lot of times I'll use the Freak Show cab.
Okay, well, so where can crafters get their hands on your beautiful yarn?
I do have a website, so it's www.serialknitters.com, and I'm also going to be starting working at Acorn Street.
Oh, that's exciting.
Tomorrow's going to be my first day there. They carry a lot of my yarn, so if you need a color consultation or something like that, you can find me there.
Where is that?
Acorn Street is in Ravenna area of Seattle.
It's near University Village.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Then it's a great yarn shop. Love them.
It is a really nice yarn shop.
Yeah,
It's one of the reasons why I'm working
fabulous.
there because I like that place so much. I end up being there a lot. And then I will be there for the shop hop, which is May 14th through the 18th. I'm going to be doing a pop-up there all 5 days of the shop.
Okay.
I'll be at Fiber Fusion Northwest in beginning of June, Lock Fiber August 8th through 10th. And then PNW Fiber Expo, which is in Port Angeles. I'll be there October 3rd through 5th.
Wow.
So other than that, I don't have any other trunk shows scheduled right now, but I'm sure I will be putting more trunk shows up. And I usually list that stuff on my website.
And you can also subscribe to Debbie's newsletters.
You can subscribe to my newsletter. You can also follow me on Instagram. It's at Serial Knitters on Instagram. I post everything on there. And then I just started using Blue Sky at serialknitters.bsky.social.
And we'll put all of this information in our show notes so people know how to find you. Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I really
Thanks for having me.
enjoyed learning
Yeah.
about all the dyeing, and it is my fantasy to have, well, the place we went, the skein and tipple, the combination yarn and bar store.
That is on my list. I need to go there.
It's
It's
really
really
good.
good. Yeah.
It's during the day, it's yarn, and then they close.
Yeah. Never speakeasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right up my alley.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, so
Yeah.
I'm excited to try your sangria
Yeah.
recipe and to check out your website. And thank you so much for coming. And we just really enjoyed learning everything about what inspires you and how hard it is. That I'm not going to look at a hand-dyed skein of yarn in quite the same way, thanks to you. So thank you for that. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't knit
Knit
like
like my
my sister.
sister, but do buy yarn from Debbie Prickle at Serial Knitters.
And check out our website at bootyandbossy.com.